welcome to First 7-Inch Club episode. Is this the big 25? It is. This is the big 25. First 7-Inch Club is a podcast where we dig up a 7-inch by a forgotten or obscure band within the realms of hardcore punk and metal and discuss whether or not they're worth being remembered. We also provide factoids and trivia that we glean from the internet and our own personal experiences. Although we don't personally consider ourselves know-it-alls or experts, many other people do. I am Mike, and with me is Scott.
Mike, I don't know if they call it a jubilee, but it's silver. So the 25th anniversary, 25th episode, silver. So I'm going to give you some silver in the mail. I'm just going to send you a tooth. I know that this is like a degraded circumstance, but do you ever like hate listen or hate watch like the old version of it where you kind of like it?
No, I mean, I used to hate watch wrestling sometimes. Like, yeah. I mean, I watch wrestling for pleasure too, but yeah. You know, I would watch like WWE Raw, even though I know it would suck, but even I think I've even cut that out. So I don't really think there's anything I hate watch on purpose anymore.
There's one specific thing I've been digging up every so often since I was a kid. I remember when I was a kid and I put on, you know, maybe I was 11 or 12 or something like that. And you know how sometimes when you're a little bit younger, you'd put on VH1, like, you know, maybe I'm an adult today. Mm-hmm. I'm going to put on VH1, because in the old days, VH1 was like for grown-ups and MTV was for kids. And I put it on and I was like getting ready for school or something. And this video came on that I've hated for my whole life, but I also have to watch it, and it really gets stuck in my body. And it's Manhattan Transfer Soul Food to Go. If you've never seen this video, this is something, you know how every once in a while someone will write like a BuzzFeed style article where they really probe into something really dumb and make it and just like dissect it. This deserves it. This is like you will not believe all the things that are going wrong in the video as you watch it. But it's like, if anyone who doesn't know, Manhattan Transfer was this kind of almost like a barbershop quartet, or like they were like a jazz vocal quartet in the 80s, and they had a hit with like this gimmicky Boy from New York City song that was everywhere for a little while. And then I don't think they had any other hits, but this song actually made the rounds, and it's an original. It wasn't a cover. And if you just stand up from your chair right now, you make jazz hands and pretend to tap dance and smile, you're in their genre. You're mimicking their genre. The main guy looks like Ed Harris, but with like ponytail Ed Harris, and the rest of the band looks like Seinfelds, like lady and man Seinfelds, and they wear Seinfeld, you know, clothing and stuff like that. So they're walking through the jungle. It's the 80s. So everyone was into Indiana Jones. So they're sort of walking through like a jungle or some sort of wilderness, and they end up at a diner, and it's just a diner. There's nothing special about the diner. It's not like a wilderness diner. And they're singing their song. And then claymation versions of them come walking out, little ones. And if you see, remember like 10 years ago, ABBA tried to make a comeback with that. There was like claymation ABBA that took over ABBA's life or something. I'm positive. I would bet my eyes it's influenced by this video because it looks the same. They're terrible claymation. They look like them, but they're horrible. They have horrible little mouths that don't lip sync properly. Like little, what was that? Celebrity Death Match or Robot Chicken, the way their mouths are like little donuts that move weirdly. Mm-hmm. This is worse. This is horrible. And I won't go line by line on the song, although this deserves it. This deserves real dissection and examination. It's just all the lyrics are just this extremely, extremely white murderer's row of everything that like the Fraser Cranes of the world took from everyone else. And one particular line says, "Do you believe in jazz?" And they rhymed that with jazz earlier in the song. So they rhymed jazz twice, and that's the line of the song. And I like to watch it, but in a terrible way. And I encourage other people to seek this out. Manhattan Transfer, Soul Food to Go. You won't be dissatisfied.
I haven't seen it. I have it queued up for after the show. Well, I don't remember it, at least. I might have seen it. But I also was reading the lyrics, and there is a line that says, "I know you know hip-hop never stop. I'll pour you tasty funk."
Funk. Nobody says tasty funk other than people like this.
I'm really looking forward to this. And yeah, I remember things like Manhattan Transfer being on TV and just being like, yeah, it's for adults. Like when I'm an adult.
Yeah.
I remember my uncle had a friend who was like into adult music like that. And I was like, yeah, maybe someday when I'm his age, I'll understand it. But
it's going to kick in for us sooner. I'm so much going to like Manhattan Transfer.
Coincidentally, I have a couple topics that are kind of floating around the same Manhattan Transfer toilet bowl, almost. Not really, but it has to do with weird 80s music. But this one, I was thinking that I know Scott has revealed on this podcast and previous podcasts like All Holes Filled and Border Boss and then he's had some eclectic taste when he was a kid. And I was reminded of a band that popped up on an Instagram like a flyer. And I was reminded of a band, and I was like, man, I bet if Scott was aware of these guys when he was a kid, he probably loved them. So I got to know, Scott, hopefully you have a good story about this, but what is your opinion on the 24/7 Spies?
Well, 24/7 Spies is from when, you know, is obviously from when you had to buy music.
Yeah.
And there was no way around that. And they had I think they had one video that was really bad.
Yeah.
And it kept me at arm's length. And I was like, I should probably like that. Cause at the time I was still sort of in the interim between really being into Living Color. Like yeah. I thought Living Color was, I think I said this on the show before, but I thought they were going to change the world. I thought that the future was Living Color. And, I'm dancing around the fact that I thought, you know, like the Black Rock Coalition was the thing that I should like really explore. And, I just kept thinking I should get that 24/7 Spies record. I should get that 24/7 Spies record. Hard. One of them was called Harder Than You All the Time, I think. Great yeah. album title. Great album title. So I bought it, and no, it's like, it's not really listenable. It's not listen. It doesn't make any sense. It's too all over the map. I think that there's some hip hop on it. There's like funk, and it's like just kind of shitty. And I don't remember. I wonder if I listen to it now, if I'd like it. Probably a lot. But back then I was just like, you know, it's not. There's no Sunless Saturday on it. There's no like, you know, it's a really bad record, I think.
Well, at least I was in the ballpark. At least that I was right that you actually did give it a shot and you weren't just like, I've never heard of them. So I'm glad I was right there. But yeah, I was reminded because I was one of those Instagram like flyer archive sites posted a flyer and it was like them and Gorilla Biscuits. And it just brought me back to when for some reason the 24/7 Spies got to play any kind of show possible. So like, you know, play with the Gorilla Biscuits or they play like, you know, an MTV style show. And I was like, oh yeah, Scott's probably into them. I like skimmed on Spotify real quick and it sounded like heavier than I remember, but I wouldn't say good. It was definitely, I thought it was like complete cheese dick shit like in my brain, but it was like at least a little heavier than I thought it would be.
They were on In Effect, weren't they? I think they might have been
on at one point, and then they got onto like a bigger label at some point.
My brain is stuck on the idea that In Effect was kind of like a crossover thrash, crossover funk metal, like as we've spoken about that now forgotten Last Crack era of sort of hardcore, but not quite, and probably not even in the scene
kind
of music.
My other topic was that I guess it's a given that this podcast is a failure. We have failed. We're not famous yet. We're not on the Patreons. We're not making millions of dollars. Yeah. So I already have a new idea for a podcast. So our next $1 million music podcast. And that's I was listening to a bunch of those Kmart tapes the other day. The ones that a few years ago, if you guys aren't nerds on the internet, like several years ago, somebody just found like a whole batch of old Kmart tapes, like the tapes that they would play over the loudspeaker at Kmart while people were shopping back in the 80s and 90s. And they put them all on the internet and you could still find them there. You're going to have to do the legwork. It's not that hard. So this is a basic internet detective assignment. You just type in Kmart tape and they'll pop up. But, but you know, I was listening to a bunch of them and I was just thinking it would be great to do like a Beyond Yacht Rock type show about Kmart core or just Mart core even. And because like I listened to, you know, a good 4 hours of these tapes straight. And it's so crazy that they go through so many different genres and eras of music, but they're all kind of related. Like they all you could pinpoint some things like first of all, you have to be able to eat a sandwich while you're drumming on any song on these tapes. Like you have to be able to eat a sandwich and still be able to drum the song. Anything where you can't eat a sandwich is too fast for these tapes. you could only sway. That's like the fastest thing you can do while listening to this. You can't dance or even like headbang or anything. You could only sway. But outside of that, it's just like different genres. And it's pretty crazy how I don't know how they just keep that pace through tapes and tapes of this fucking music. And I don't know.
It's over years too, right? Isn't it like several,
over
like
years. Years? Yeah. And it's just like, it's to the point where, cause the tapes have the commercials too. Like, you know, every once in a while it'll be like, you know, buy Valvoline, blah, blah, blah. And it's like, sometimes they sound even more upbeat than the music. And you're just like, holy shit. That's you know, it's like some rapid fire shit. A lot of things reminding you not to smoke. Cause I think all the tapes were around the time where I was like, okay, hey guys, we're not smoking indoors anymore. Like that's not happening anymore, which is pretty crazy to think. Cause like if those rules were instilled now, everybody would be smoking all over the place. They'd be like, you can't tell me what to do. These are my freedoms. I'm going to fucking smoke inside the Kmart. But, but yeah, like if you guys, you like, I know they made those CVS bangers tapes, some guy or a person, I don't know. It could have been a team of people. I don't know, but they made like these CVS bangers, but he or they did like four volumes within like 8 years. That's not a good output. And,
I think he also made them, like he kind of made them from his own mind. Right.
And I don't know if it's as uniform, but I would think it would be really good to do a Beyond Yacht Rock type show where we just listen to these. I don't know. I mean, there's somebody making these tapes. There has to be somebody that's like, okay, this is so-and-so music. This is Kmart music. And like, this can go on the Kmart comps because it's so crazy how they're all like have this kind of like thread of the same tempo and just kind of meandering pace. Like it's just pretty crazy. So if you're looking for like a real chill day,
you and I think Shelby got me into that Grandma's Cottage thing.
Oh yeah.
And that's on I actually am really, really enjoying looking at that label's stuff. It's like Dungeon Creeper. I don't know what it is. It's like, it's a Dungeon Synth label, but Dungeon Synth has become this whole other universe where it doesn't have to be even dungeony anymore. Some of it is spacey. Some of it's like Grandma's Cottage. It's like childhood memory stuff. But the stuff that is dungeony really looks like Dragon Magazine from 1978. Like they have really dug into the aesthetic. It looks shitty in a good way, like old ElfQuest comics or something like that. Yeah. And the music is really kind of super chilled out, murky, you know, vinyl scratchy, tape hissy. Mellow music, a lot of it, and some of it's kind of dark, and it's still trying to be dungeony, but like
there's one called Troll Hole or something. Something Hole, and it sounds exactly like the name. Like it sounds like you're at a pub for fucking elves and shit. It's pretty crazy.
There's one that was called Moons of Bespin or something like that. It's Star Wars theme, but it's just good. Like it doesn't sound like anything Star Wars. So if people are into that kind of stuff, the Kmart tapes are going to be right up your alley. It's the same feel. It's the same feeling as being transported back into a dentist office 35 years ago.
Hole Dweller. Like. That's even worse. Hole Dweller. And they have like the old Lord of the Rings before it was popular artwork on it. And, and I think, I mean, I can't promise anything. I don't know Grandma's Cottage, but they seem to drop all their stuff right around Christmas every year. And you'll be listening to this. Close to Christmas, so maybe we'll get Grandma's Cottage on the show.
Wow. Yeah, they have to think of some holiday cheer between now and then looking ahead to the show.
But anyway, if you don't know already, check out our Instagram for 7-Inch Club. It's all letters. You could email us for 7-Inch Club at Gmail, or you could find our YouTube at for 7-Inch Club too. I usually post flyers. I've been slacking this week, but I've had a bunch of days off, a bunch of unexpected days off, so I've been enjoying my time not doing shit. But this week, we have a request. Finally, we're back to requests. This was requested by someone on Instagram named Get Awesome Records. Mm-hmm. This band is Breed Extinction, and this is a self-titled record from 1999. Not on a record label. It's a self-released. Mm-hmm. And Breed, if you're not familiar, it's Breed / Extinction, if that means anything to you. But
I'm surprised this is a suggestion because of something we'll probably talk about.
Shortly. So Get Awesome Records, he or she, whoever the fuck it is, I think it's a dude, I can't remember, but they posted, like commented somewhere that was like, oh, you should talk about Breed Extinction, 7-Inch, blah, blah, blah. And I was just like, oh, I kind of like I remember that name, but I can't remember why. Mm-hmm. I was like, yeah, I kind of remember them, I'll look into it. And then I went to their Discogs, and lo and behold, they put out an EP. They have a demo, a 7-inch, a EP, and a split. Yeah, not even a demo. I'm sure they do have a demo. Oh, it's a split LP. I didn't see that, but either way, they have a 7-inch, a split LP, and a CD EP. And the CD EP is on Losing Face Records, which is a label that was run by a friend of the show, Byron, and friend of the show, Linwood. And I think this was the only release where I think they were both running it at the same time.
Yeah.
And then I think Byron peaced out, so I vaguely remember them because they own this CD. So that's why I vaguely remember them. I remember liking the CD, but I have no proof of this because there's no images on it on the Discogs, but I'm pretty sure it was one of those CDs that didn't have a name on the label. And yeah. This was also during the popularity of CD booklets. So like you're asked out unless you're a very notable band, not putting your name on a CD label during the age of CD booklets. Cause you know, you're not fumbling around like, I wonder what that is. You're just going to skip over for the next 150 things that you have. So, but I do remember liking it. So I, you know, I didn't know these guys a little more than I thought I did. Outside of that, and speaking of which though, Losing Face, I don't know if Linwood himself wrote this out, but they have,
this is what I was going to say
for a record label that only had 7 releases over, you know, a few years. They have a very concise origin story on Discogs. Like you, this is the whole fucking whole origin and life and death of Losing Face Records up there. So
they put out a record called Seamless and it kind of got poached by Equal Vision.
Yeah. Yeah.
And half of the write up is sort of, rumor has it that that EV Art put it out. It's all kind of written as though it's like a little bit Murder, She Wrote at the end there.
Yeah.
Really first person.
I'm sure they don't know. Yeah, I'm sure. Sure, Linwood was left in mystery. But yeah. So I did hear this band. It wasn't like something where I could remember when I put the 7-inch on, because I had never heard the 7-inch, but when I put the 7-inch on, I was like, yeah, I vaguely remember this. I think I want to say the CD was a little slower, like a little spacier, a little less chaotic, but I could be wrong. It was a long time ago. But outside of that, I also for some reason had this idea in my brain, and I don't know where I got it from, that these guys were from Connecticut, and I don't think that's true, but I swear to God, like I'm having like a real Mandela effect where it said they were from Connecticut in this record and it doesn't. I don't know, like I just think that was memory was planted in my brain and I don't remember. So I don't know if they're from Connecticut. There's very little about this band on Discogs, really. I did some searching and all I could find is there's like a post on like Stuck in the Past or something like that. Mm-hmm. And in the comments section, some guy's like, yeah, I was in a band with two of these guys before this and they stole all our riffs for Pre-Extinction. And so there's shit like that. But I don't know what they did after. Actually, that's a lie, because while I was searching for stuff right before we started, I don't really know what they did after that, but there's a YouTube video upload of their split LP, and in the comments, a man named DJ Dillinger is like, hey, I was in this band, and I don't even have that 7-inch, or I had that LP, and so I clicked on his YouTube, and he has like one song up, and it's like, I guess what you would call folk punk? I don't know. I am really out of the loop when it comes to people playing acoustic shit, because I don't fucking care, but I think it's like folk punk, and I was like, oh boy, like this is not my thing at all. So if that guy was in the band, he's doing folk punk in what I and 5 years ago, because I think it was 2005, six years ago, what he was doing folk punk in Brooklyn, New York. So outside of that, and I don't even know, because there's no DJ listed in this, like there's no DJ listed in this record. There's not even a guy with D. There's a couple J's. There's no D's in the band. So I don't know. Maybe they went by their middle names in this record. But outside of that, yeah, I don't know where they're from if Connecticut is just something I made up or I saw it somewhere else. But that's all I really know. You know, we'll get into it when we're talking about the music probably. But these guys would probably want to be known as traveling the trains on the train tracks, because that was kind of their gimmick, I think. So outside of that, I don't really know anything about them.
Well, you did you got most of my doxes, so you, good job, Mike. This episode, you really nailed it. The only couple things that you probably didn't find, because you're not a maniac, they're mentioned in a book, a very expensive book published by SUNY Albany Press of all places, but not by, not an Albany author. He's some, teacher. He's some professor in, Eau Claire. I forget. Was that Wisconsin? Eau Claire, Wisconsin? Yeah. I think so. He wrote a book called Punk Productions. And his name is Stacy Thompson. So you can easily find it for download. This is a man who really cares about punk a lot. He wrote, he's a grown man. He's in his at least 40s or older. And he wrote this while he was of that age. And it's kind of like a history of punk, but it's really up its own ass about Marxism. It's like everything is about Marxism, as though he's never heard of New York hardcore, all the bands who are currently all like anti-maskers and stuff like that. Like a lot of punk was not very Marxist or smart or anything like that, but this guy really wanted it to be that way. So he basically talks about them as being a crime think band because they do have a couple songs on a crime think.
Yeah.
I forget the name of that zine. I don't remember the name of the zine.
Inside Front.
Inside Front. So they have a song or two on some Inside Front comps. That's basically all he says about it. But I do recommend Stacy Thompson Punk Productions. Look it up on Amazon just for the reviews. There's only a few, but they dwell very heavily on whether Stacy is a man or a woman. It's a man. And then one of them is a 10-page attack piece about how stupid Stacy is for making this whole book about Marxism as well. And this person is mad, like personally mad. That's worth reading. And then there is one live video on Vimeo of them playing at Brass City Records, okay. Which I think is Connecticut. Yeah.
So they're probably from Connecticut. I was right.
Yeah. It's so-so, kind of like low energy. It's just kind of like three guys like in a almost like a coffee house setting. And there must have just been like a back corner of that record store or something like that. They're pretty energetic. Not that crazy. Bassist playing a Rickenbacker, but that's a $1,500 bass. So crime think my ass. These guys.
We'll get into that.
Had some backing. And then the other thing is that the blog thing that you found about it's on 1X Path. Which is the other Stuck in the Past, says that they were in a band called Thieves. You can't find a lot about that, but it does appear that they were in Connecticut. So I think this band is pretty much.
Yeah, I kind of remember Thieves. I didn't catch that, but yeah, I kind of remember them. So
if you listen to that folk punk record, so the only thing we can confirm that these guys did is this folk punk song. There's one, and it's a novelty country folk punk song about avoiding a barbershop playing reggaeton. So that's the only legacy that we can concretely point to for
kind
this
of racist
band.
yeah
it's a little bit iffy.
I forgot to mention that in that blog post it also says that it was rumored that some of these guys were also in Catharsis, but I think that's a lie. I think they probably started that rumor themselves.
Well, they do thank Catharsis on this record. Yes,
of course they do. We'll get into this.
Doesn't everybody?
So there's no labels, so there's nothing to talk about there. And we just talked about Losing Face, so you got a bonus label of not even this record. But check out that Losing Face CD. It's not on the internet, so I don't know where you're going to check it out, but $337 right now on Discogs if you want to buy it. And it has one of those Losing Face, and I guess this too, but not as much, but the Losing Face CD cover is like what's hot, that hot shit right now, the Dream AI bots that just make like you type in words and it makes like a kind of like a vague cover describing those words. That's kind of what the Breed Extinction Alaska CD cover is like. It looks like they typed in like burning building or something, and that's what came up. But I guess we could get into the actual record. So I'm going to fully admit I didn't check, so I don't know if you can make this out, Scott, but up until about 20 minutes ago, I was like, oh, it's just a black cover and it says Breed Extinction in typewriter font. But I was looking at another video upload of this record and it's like hitting the sun and there's like an actual black on black or like even like dark gray on black kind of etching on it. And I didn't notice that until 20 minutes ago. So I guess so you could see that in the scan that came out.
I could barely make it out in your scan, but I was looking at other scans of it and it's like almost like a bird or something.
Yeah, it looks like really a weird bird. Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's cool. Like I at first was thinking this was another the enclictic kind of thing where it's like, okay, you're really wasting space, but you know, it's a self-release, so you do you. But yeah, it's kind of cool to do the dark gray kind of thing. That's I get it. For 1999, that was some hot shit.
Post Black Album by Metallica, who did this.
The back cover is like, you know, again, like some kind of abstract, like it almost looks like an abstract sun, like a burning sun or just some kind of overexposed picture. It's hard to tell. And it just has the song titles, very tiny 10-point font, barely legible. It's just they're printed out with brackets around them, another hardcore staple. And on the inside, there's like a kind of an overexposed X-ray type of picture of a bug, of a beetle, some other like weird, just like static-y stuff that you put on record layouts in 1999, the late 90s. And then the lyrics, and then there's two things preaching to you. The first thing is in the actual 7-inch cover, and it's cool because it starts off, that's Rob, who is the guitar and one of the singers, It's one of those things where it says Rob guitar and rasp, and it says Greg filth. So I don't know if Greg was the lead singer and Rob was the guy shrieking the whole time on the record, but either way, he seems to be the puppet master. And he says, like, I know that a hardcore record is not going to change the world. So it's good. It's good that he was a little grounded, but yeah, it does go on a lot more, or I don't know what it's just like the Twitter meme, like, it's too long. I'm not going to read it. Either sorry that sucks or I'm happy for you. I don't know. But then if you have a better attention span than me, it also comes with a folded out, just regular Xerox piece of paper with a whole entire essay about greed and capitalism and all the things you expect from an inside front / crime think band. And I'll get into that when we talk about the music, if you guys aren't familiar. Because that's pretty much my whole thesis about this band is about this whole scene. But there's a lot of stuff saying, you need financial support to pay for punk rock shows, records, and t-shirts that support anti-capitalism designs. Is this theoretically possible to live outside of the constraints of the government? Blah, blah, blah. There's a lot of dreamer shit going on like that. And this was just, a whole page full of it. Not really my scene, and again, for the ninth time, I'll get into it, but that's the 7-inch. It's kind of like, outside of the cover, if I picked this up and opened it up and saw that sheet fall out, I would know exactly what to expect from this music. And so as far as that goes, perfect layout for this, perfect layout for what we're about to hear.
I think most of the clip art on this is pretty meaningless. I mean, it's like, kind of dark stuff or whatever, but it just seems like they just, I don't know, grab whatever. Song titles are written as though there's some kind of markup language, like HTML style, which is about right for 99. We're all just starting to learn about HTML in 99. Very same year that came out, there was a very decent Linda Weinman book called Designing Web Graphics, Volume 3. The cover looks a lot like this layout. A lot like this layout. The two manifestos are included in this. That's a lot. That's two manifestos. That's a lot. And the big one is really just further proof that it's really good that there was no social media when we were younger. I was just as dumb as this manifesto, and I probably would have been writing some shit like this. I had a website back then, and I definitely was like venting my spleen like this. But this manifesto gets nothing done. It's just like all chowderhead shit. And it literally, the line is like, it's like, I don't want to blow your mind, but even to buy punk records, you need money. And, and that stands, I think it's written in all caps, and the whole thing up until then is pretty just like free form. I don't even like money. Money, like greed. It's just a kind of, and then all of a sudden it's like, by the way, you need money to buy punk records too. And that's a lot. And especially like now, 2021, if you even dream about opening your mouth about like capital or the means of production or anarchy or anything like that, you better have read all the books and you better have listened to all the podcasts. You can't enter any of those threads unless you want to be burned alive in public. You can't just be like, money is stupid. You can't just say that shit to people. You better have some wikis open. You better have some things to lean on. But for real, I urge people to look in Google at Designing Web Graphics Volume 3 and hit me up if you agree. This designer was a fan of that week.
I also need to mention, since there's such harping about money, they thank Kurt from God City Studios, which is, there's definitely much cheaper ways to record your self-released album that you paid for with your very fancy guitar equipment. So I don't know. Somebody has money. Somebody they know has money. Yeah. And I can't really stereotype people from Connecticut because I'm from Connecticut and very poor. But there are poor parts of Connecticut. I know people don't believe that. A lot more rich parts too, though. So I don't know. I guess I'll get into it before we even get into the music, because I guess that kind of leads into the music. But if you guys are younger or just weren't aware, there was a zine called Inside Front started by the singer of Crime Think. And at first it was kind of a zine and it was kind of cool. It was like kind of cool ideas, like, oh, you should read The Abolition of Work. You should read the Communist Manifesto. It was like, kind of just like basic stuff back then that maybe people didn't know about. I read The Abolition of Work. I was like, yeah, man, fuck yeah. This is fucking sweet. This is sweet as hell. I'm down with this. So, it helps people out. But then there was some switch like after a few years where for Inside Front kind of stopped. And Inside Front was a little cheesy too. Like I'm pretty positive it was the Lariat review, the friend of the show and listener Aaron, his band, which was kind of, you know, they're kind of on that level. They weren't really practicing, but they were on that Inside Front type of level as far as politics and stuff like that. Not as ridiculous, but I'm pretty sure it was a Lariat review where the Catharsis singer, I'm pretty sure he reviewed it and he said he wept while listening to Lariat. And I was like, fuck off, dude. Like, what is your problem? But anyways, but you know, there was some good ideas, some honest to God, like, okay, these are some fucking good ideas. We shouldn't be working this much. Like, this is bullshit. But then like within 2 years, it like somehow transformed into you can't ever truly be free unless you eat out of the dumpster, you hitchhike everywhere, and you live inside of a drain pipe. Those are the only ways you are ever going to be truly free in this world. And it's like, what? Like, I don't know, dude. Like, I kind of like living in places and eating food that's my choice and stuff like that. So it just like, I was kind of like, at that point, I was like, okay. Like, I was down with you guys before. Like, you had a lot of good ideas. You know, there are ways to cut corners. We don't need all this material possessions, blah, blah, blah. Like, there's a lot of good ideas that helped me along, like, you know, help me grow and help me mold my own opinions. But once they got to that point where it was like, yeah, you have to fucking hop trains and do this shit. And it's just like, oh boy, man, this is fucking, it just became like anything else. It became like Hare Krishna or fucking Straight Edge or whatever else was just like people were doing at the time, where it was just kind of like, it started off as supposedly an idea, but it just kind of became a lifestyle or like kind of a gimmick for these bands, including Catharsis, including Breed Extinction, including, was it Zagoda? Yeah, Zagoda.
Yep.
There is a few more there, but Catharsis was the main one. They were like the fucking ringleaders of this shit. Mm-hmm. And Breed Extinction, obviously, very, very big fans of Catharsis. Mm-hmm. Just, you know, even before we got into the music, the all of the same kind of manifestos, all that shit. So these guys were knee deep in it without even knowing them. I could tell you that. So yeah, we'll get into the music now. This is a 4-song. I love that full sound right now. We're in 4 songs.
Hell yeah.
7-inch. Yeah. Clocking in around 12 minutes, I think, even. So this is a good amount. But side A, the first song is called Sorry My Mouse Just Died. Let's see. It's not called that. It's called Program / Reprogram. So the song is Program /
Reprogram.
Yeah. So Program Reprogram. So this starts off, it's fast and chaotic, heavy, kind of has a little Gehenna in there, definitely has a lot of Catharsis. This band loved Catharsis, man. And Catharsis is not an easy band to explain if you've never heard them. They're kind of like, again, fast, chaotic, dramatic, had a lot of metal parts. Catharsis was around like several years before they became like the kind of the crime think leaders of dumpster diving and shit like that. And so they had like a lot of time to like, they started off pretty much as like an integrity worship band. And then at some point they kind of molded that into this more dramatic, like epic feeling, half metal, half, or like somewhat metal, somewhat metalcore, somewhat traditional hardcore type of band. With a singer with crazy vocals, like insane, like shrieking vocals. And then this kind of like, he would do this, it wasn't exactly a speaking or quiet part. It was like a very dramatic, evil reading of things. Like, he would just talk like this, and this is how he would read his lyrics. And it was like, it was cool though. Like, it sounded like he had like a good voice for it, and then he would break into the more shrieking, chaotic stuff. They're doing that on this. This is like patented shit by Brian from Catharsis. I've never heard anybody try and do this shit before, because it's so like trademarked to this guy. But they have two singers doing it. So they have a singer, he's screaming most of the time, and then they have a shrieker, which I assume is Rob the guitarist, also who wrote all this shit. And it's cool. It's not like they're matching up, like, you know, it's not like all in sync. It's all over the place. It's pretty cool. The first time where you really hear that the secondary vocalist is during a quieter part where they slow down the music and the catharsis guy is trying to do his catharsis thing of talking like this and being real deliberate. And the shrieker shrieks, and the first shriek you hear, it sounds like he goes, "What's up?" And that might be a commentary on capitalism. That was a big commercial at the time.
Yeah.
He might be like, that might be a little hidden messenger there. Who knows? The real big difference between this singer and the actual singer of Catharsis is the guy from Catharsis was very good at this, as I said. This guy is not. He is really struggling to sound serious. He kind of sounds like a geek. You could tell that this is not like come natural to him like it does to the dude from the Catharsis. So they should have called an audible, and he should have just did his own thing for this. But I like, outside of politics and all that shit, I think this song is fucking sweet. The only thing I would hold against it is this song sounds like it was definitely crafted for onstage freakouts. And that was like the first thing they thought of was like, oh, man, we just got to have a song. But, Scott has already proven me wrong, said they had a pretty lazy set that he watched. So maybe they didn't do onstage freakouts. But this definitely sounds like an onstage freakout song to me.
I have a feeling the lineup changed at some point because the video I saw, it's three piece. The bassist and guitarist do the vocals. But I've seen, there's a picture even on the Discogs, I think, of somebody just singing. It looks like it might be the bassist. So maybe the bassist gave up bass at some point, and that's, maybe that got wilder, because lead vocalists in general make sets wilder. It's a, don't be a three piece. Don't do it. Nobody ever moshes to Rush. Don't be a three piece. But I think this is how you bitch about working for money. This song is how you bitch about it. It's not perfect, but don't write a manifesto. Just write a song, because you can do anything you want in a song. You can even be kind of stupid. This song is like, you work your ass off, you lead a completely forgettable life, and someone else gets all the rewards. You get a dirt nap. You get nothing out of it. I think this is a great blend of screams. There's like the high guy and the low guy, and there's like an out of breath guy and a cackling like Salacious Crumb from Return of the Jedi guy, little gremlin guy. And I like that they're shouting different overlapping things. I think that's pretty rare so far in first 7-inch club history. And it's kind of rare in all of music because it's like hard to write lyrics. So writing extra lyrics, you've gone way above and beyond what a lot of bands do. We've had a lot of doublers. We've had a lot of overlappers, but very few bands have set foot into this exhausting territory. So congratulations. I think this recording is pretty mushy, even for 99. It could be because it's on vinyl. Like I listened to another rip of it too, and it's all kind of like,
yeah, that actually led me to another theory that maybe they're just thanking Kurt from God City. I also think God City might've been somewhat new at the time. So maybe they got a freebie. Maybe he's just testing stuff out, but yeah, it doesn't sound like the standards of what you would hear coming out of this recording studio in the future.
Good opening track though. It's really panicked, crazy, urgent. Big triumphant metal part going on into the bad news part where you're dead and you've got nothing out of life. So that's it's perfect. Like this is a really good opener. You're going to have me at a huge disadvantage for most of the reviews though, because like I know that you're a Gehenna fan and I like that's kind of a whole genre I know about. And I listen to kind of the later versions of some of those bands, but it didn't even dawn on me. I didn't know Catharsis did all the talky shit that these guys do. So it's really unfolding a whole storyline in my brain right now.
I guess we didn't mention the song, I guess, is also about working and being a sheep and stuff like that. So that lines up. The second song is called Attrition.
No one to hear. Straight to be fucking desire. Not like, wait, no one. Fire. Not like, 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 fire. Not like,
these guys do the cool thing, again, bringing up the Eclectic again. They do the same thing the Eclectic does, except it's cool when they do it, is where they kind of just slow down the music and ring out a little and go right into the next song. It's cool when these guys do it because they have, like, songs, like whole songs, not just wacky ideas. So it works when these guys do it. It's pretty cool. I like that. This song is, again, kind of fast and chaotic, a little less fast. This song has a patented I'm playing metal riff, where they start playing the metal riff that everybody who goes to hardcore shows is familiar with. And they can point it out and say, look, those guys are playing metal. They play it. I don't hate it. I love it. So it's cool. This guy's maybe doing the Catharsis voice too much on this. He's doing a little too much. He should calm down. It's coming in through different channels. Like, it's coming through my left earbud at one point and then my right earbud. And it's like they're really freaking out in that studio. Just like, how can we make this more evil? I don't know, but it sucks. A lot of switching to the quieter parts of the song because that's like kind of trying to build up some kind of fake drama going on in the song. I don't like that. There's a lot of switching around to it. Just fucking get it over it. Do it once and, you know, go on your thing. But again, another Catharsis staple is doing that shit. Quiet stuff, probably. It's harder, you know, back then there was probably many bands that kind of did this thing, and I've seen them, but I just don't remember it. But you know, now in my old age, where I don't even go to one show a year now. But you know, I don't even know if like DIY shows exist anymore. I'm so old. Who knows? Mm-hmm. But I just can't imagine that quiet stuff working in a live setting. Like, I would just laugh at them and say, "Come on, man, what are you doing? Like, this is getting real quiet and weird, and you're trying to do this fucking serious voice. It's stupid." But you know, I probably saw a bunch of bands and didn't even notice, but it's just, I can't imagine watching it in my old age and not think it was silly. He kind of sounds like, again, he doesn't sound natural doing this sort of evil dramatic voice. He kind of sounds like the best friend from The Gate when he sing when he fucking recites the the thing, the record shit. He kind of sounds like that kid, so that's pretty cool. That's a pretty cool image to imagine the kid from The Gate singing singing the song. But again, I like this, you know, as much as I'm making fun of it, I do like this song. I don't think it's as strong as the first track, but it's still 2 for 2 for me.
It's a tricky business. I've said I don't like talky shit, and there's a lot of it in this. I think it's cool that he tries to do a creepy voice, serial killer voice, and isn't just doing the out of breath, like, "Oh, I'm going crazy," like none of that stuff. But yeah, I mean, Terry from The Gate is perfect. It's actually the part where he stops and does the talking over the record. I think it's interesting that when they start shouting in this song, the shouting part is just the talking part again. Like, they just shout. It's like, that's all. That might also be an innovation. I don't think I've ever heard that. Like, someone do the talking and then shout that part. Serious first 7-inch club landmarks being erected all around us on this record. A lot of awards being handed out. Clean guitars on this.
Yes.
Man, like, I remember being like this. I remember being like, well, you know, I want this part to have like a Spanish guitar vibes, but you know, we only have like an hour. So just record whatever comes out of my SG or whatever. And it's really, not very sweet sounding clean guitar. But then they just launch into a very solid series of thrash metal exercises. And just when you're ready to start doing some hard pitting, he starts talking again. And that's basically your journey all the way to the end of the song. It's this rotating variety of sick, heavy parts that collapse into a creepy talking part. You know, in the forgotten world of 1999, people didn't know about me yet, so they didn't know that this was stupid to do. So I forgive them, but it's stupid to do.
I forgot to mention that this song is about how God stinks and religion stinks.
Yeah.
And I'm going to throw a little caution flag on that one. 1999, a little too late for, I think, for doing your manifesto, I live in a drain pipe, hardcore, and still talking about how God stinks. We bought the record. We know God stinks. You don't need to have a whole song about it. So we flip it over. Side B. First song is called Pill Form.
Yeah.
I couldn't really figure out what the song is about because there's not a lot of lyrics. But it seems it's another song about being a drone to the machine. Those are actual lyrics. A drone tied to machines. So it's either about working your life away or being a sheep again. And I don't know. There's things about bed sores and taking pills to keep on living. So maybe it's about how you should just kill yourself if you're old and withered. Who knows? Who knows what these guys are going for? But that's what the song is about. The song starts off pretty heavy, like pretty heavy, heavy riff. You could almost mosh to it. And I imagine these are kind of the guys that would reprimand you for that. I don't know if that's true, but it seems like they would have probably stopped the song and say, hey, cut it out. Hey, people are trying to enjoy this. You cut it out. We're going to play this heavy mosh song and reprimand you for it. So the Gehenna influence in the first side, I was just like, it could be coincidence. This is definite Gehenna influence. They were definitely very aware of Gehenna. I think 1999, or actually I think of the year before, is when their big like half discography came out and was like they're hitting all over the place, and they weren't just like a kind of under the radar band. So I'm pretty sure they picked that up. I would assume that was I'm pretty sure Catharsis and Gehenna were bros, so it makes sense. There's another riff in this, another metal riff, where if they played it again live, people would scream out Slayer. They play one of those riffs. And, that's it. This song's pretty good too. It's again ferocious and chaotic, and there's a lot less talking parts. So this is pretty good. This is neck and neck with the first with track one as far as the best song on the record.
This song's lyric sheet itemizes which vocalist is doing which line, and I'm over the moon about that. Thank you. You know, like I love overlapping vocals, and it looks like you guys do too, because you took it really seriously. I think we're still on the same dumb page with politics. And, you know, I'm like a dumb leftist too. Like, I believe in a bunch of progressive stuff, but I don't have any foundation. I don't read any books, so I'm not going to argue with you. I'm just super dumb, but I believe in like a futuristic world, and I want it. So I believe in futuristic things. The only problem is, I think this song is about how useless it is to keep someone on life support. I think that's what this is about. And they say that you only do it out of fear of the unknown and that you shouldn't be afraid of death. However, the last two songs are explicitly about how death sucks and God's not there for you. And in the end, you're eaten by worms and you get no reward and no afterlife. So which is it? Like, should I be brave and let you pull the plug, or should I tell society to fuck off and keep me plugged in forever? Because death sucks. Like, I think every song on the record is a little bit riff salad. Like, you don't remember any of these riffs. They're all cool, but you don't really remember any of them. This song's big, heavy, thrashy idea is the sludge waltz, and that's something I also work with occasionally and when I'm in a metal band, and I appreciate it. This isn't the first heavy sludge waltz that we've had even on the show, so the awards are tapering off. You're not getting an award for that one, but I'm glad you put one in here. I'm glad that you did that because I like that sound. So.
So the last song is called Jennifer. Does the same thing that the first side did, where it kind of just slows down and rings out and goes right into the second song. So that's cool. This song seems to just be about getting your heart broken. So it seems to be about a heartbreak song. Kind of a dumb thing to put on your big ferocious political record. Like, fucking nut up, man. Like, what the fuck? Are you going to survive on those train tracks when you're fucking whining about some girl? Come on, man. Yeah, you gotta fucking nut up. That's about my notes, I guess. oh, yeah. There's one more note. This song does the... And as Scott said about track two and bringing him back to things he would do, this song brings me back because there's a dramatic gallop into a crazy part, which was just, mm-hmm. you know, that was a bread and butter in 1999. You're going to, that was the bread and butter of any song. That's exactly what you want to hear. And then they go into the clean singing. And this was definitely a huge thing. This was just like mind-blowing in 1999 that anybody could do these three things and piece them together. And it's kind of obsolete because no one on earth has the balls to do clean singing without fucking millions of auto-tunes hooked up to their voices now. Like, no one is clean singing naturally in the raw, yeah. organically anymore. This dude does not give a fuck. He is singing clean. Again, this is another Catharsis staple. This kind of hippie singing to the fucking the crazy part hippie singing. It sucks. It's not great, but I think it would have worked better if they did more scratchy, scary singing instead of clean singing. But again, it was a mind blowing thing to do in 1999. So I understand it. I think the song would age better if they didn't do it. But either way, I expect it. This is probably my least favorite song on the record, but still pretty good.
Yeah, I actually think this song fits. Lyrically, because it's pretty classic anarchist douchebag stuff to, you know, spend all day being pissed about oppression and then whine about girls and be a creep.
Yeah. Yeah.
These days, to use technology, like, you know, 2 a.m., all of a sudden you're on your phone trying to like talk to girls in a bad way. I want to someday do a special edition first 7-inch club where we do like a forensic exploration of really heavy screamy bands that decided to just start openly writing lyrics about girls and putting girls with angel wings on their record sleeves and just like whining about this stuff. Like, there's kind of a, you know, Jane Doe is kind of a tipping point. I don't know if that record could really be considered whining about a girl. I can't tell. Here's a revelation. I don't really like the last 10 years of Converge that much. I mean, I don't like love or hate it. I just didn't really get into it. So I went back to listen to Jane Doe just for the heck of it. I never realized he only sings like one line of lyrics. Like every song is him. He just says like, stay gold. By the way, stay gold. The whole first song is a pony boy. So first 7-inch club hatred leveled at Converge. And Jane Doe, enemy of the first 7-inch club. Anyway, so this song is kind of like, actually this song is kind of a double whammy because I think those emo vocals, that's this, to choose this moment to unveil your clean vocals is just, that's a secret weapon. And on the plus side, you know, I think that the first 20 seconds or so of this, that punchy thrash intro, the galloping part, that's probably the most exciting 20 seconds on the whole record.
Okay.
And like, I think that little like transition in the beginning is exciting. It's very exciting. It should have taken us to amazing places. instead, we have, you know, a whole idea that should have stayed in your diary. I hope with all my might that her name wasn't actually Jennifer. Like if this person's name was Jennifer and she saw this record, man.
I bet if you really did some kind of forensic research, you can probably trace back a lot of these ideas to an unlikely source, which would be Weezer's Pinkerton, which I think gave a lot of nerd strength to sing like very bad songs about girls. I think that, I think that had like a major effect on people. So, that's probably where it started, even though it's not a heavy record. But yeah, this record had me thinking overall just about how, I guess these kind of performative politics are different now than they were back then, and really have had me reminiscing if I hate it more now than back then. And it's different now because now you can just make a Twitter account and be like, I'm this and I'm that, and I'm going to reprimand everybody if they're not this and that, and if they're not doing it more than they are. And unfortunately for the people who participated back then, you actually had to go out and you actually had to eat from the dumpster and you actually had to do all this stupid shit that made no sense to prove some fucking point. You actually had to say deodorant was bad. You had to do this stuff. Like, you had to do it in real life, and it was stupid. But I have to tip my hat to them because I actually did it. And now you just create a Twitter account and all of a sudden you're the biggest communist in the world. And it's just like, I don't know, man. Have you even read The Abolition of Work? You probably haven't. So like, you probably never read a book. And like, it's, I mean, obviously there are people out there that are really down for the cause and shit like that. And they can probably you know, do it without having to live in a garbage can or whatever. And, you know, there is a balance. I think when you go to the extremes, like I'm kind of putting shit words and shit into the Breed Extinction's mouth. I don't know if they're really hitchhiking and doing shit like that, but that was kind of the MO back then. And it's kind of hard to be like, oh, anti-capitalism and shit, and have like very obvious notes that you have money. Like you can't like fucking records aren't cheap. Even back then they weren't cheap. You got to press them somehow. You're getting your equipment for somewhere. So it's just kind of like, this doesn't sound like it was recorded in a garage. Like, it's not the greatest recording, but it's definitely not a garage recording. So there's a lot of things you could be called out for back then. So it takes balls to do this. So I give credit, even though I was just like, it was just kind of like, I don't know. Like at that time, I was just like, this is kind of weird and not for me, but not musically. This is my favorite shit. I love this shit. And it sucks because, you know, I just never really got down with the political part, because at this point it wasn't as abrasive and just like straightforward as Chokehold. Like Chokehold's like, this is fucking bad, but you need to do this. Like there's none of that. There wasn't any like, you need to fucking do this. You know, maybe they felt like that, but they didn't put it in their songs. And so it's just like, I like being outraged. I don't like being fucking scolded by teens. And so I just, you know, at some point I just like kind of grew out of that kind of message. But either way, rating this, it's my usual rating scale is put it in the trash, buy it on clearance in the bargain bin, or buy it for full price, or buy it for collector's prices. And I'm pretty high on this musically. And I do think this is kind of just like no one's politicaling like this anymore. It's not happening. You're not starting a band and going on the road and living on the road and fucking eating roadkill. You're not doing it anymore. It's not happening because it's ridiculous and unrealistic, and it's just kind of a dead thing. Like I think Catharsis pops up every once in a while. I saw them in like 2014 in a reunion, and it was very awkward. Like the singer was still doing the same spiel, and it's like, dude, like, come on, man. Everybody has iPhones now. You can't, like, we have the internet in our pockets. Like, you can't, you're not really telling us anything we don't know, and it's dumb. Just fucking play the songs. But I do think, you know, this is an important part, piece of hardcore history. It's kind of gets drowned out. No one kind of remembers that whole crime think thing anymore. It's kind of obsolete. And I do think it should be preserved, just like everything else that's happened in hardcore that's dumb. So I think this is at least a full price record, because it's weird. You have no idea what these guys are really up to anymore. It's self-released, and it's, you know, just going for like a buck or two on the internet. Actually, I think this was like $4. So this isn't completely bargain bin shit that I'm picking up. So, so I would definitely pay full price for this. This is I think it's a great record musically. I think the, you know, it has the dreamer politics that people had back then, and you just got to accept it.
I'm a little underwhelmed that this guy shows up outside Jennifer's house with a boombox at the end of the record. But I think other than that, I think there's a lot to offer on this record. I think it's pretty cool. I didn't have the points of reference you have mentioned. So to me, you know, they're heavy and they're bleak and metallic, and there's lots of overlapping vocals, but I don't think you would point to, like you said earlier, you wouldn't exactly say this was metalcore. It's metallic and it's hardcore, but we wouldn't think of this now as metalcore, even though it totally is. There's not really any hooks. And this, like, to me, this reminded me of something like Majority Rule, because they kind of have that just like super heavy and super metallic, but you wouldn't, it doesn't seem to fit any genre. And there's lots of screaming, and it's just like always intense, never not intense, no matter what. I think it's a good thing to not be able to summarize a band, except now you can actually summarize these guys, because you told me that they sound exactly like like Catharsis. Didn't know that. I'm curious, because, you know, Crusties and Oogies and whatever else they call them now still exist. There's lots of them, and it's a thing you could just decide to do now, and there's tutorials on how to make the jeans.
Oh yeah,
like, I should all that kind of shit.
I should have stated these people still exist, but they just don't exist playing metallic hardcore. Like that's not a genre anymore. It just doesn't, this specific genre doesn't exist. There are still people showing you how to camp in outside of a Walmart on YouTube. So that still exists.
So do they listen to hardcore, or is it all folk punk now?
I assume it's folk punk. I assume it's either punk or folk punk, and that's what you're into if you're living this lifestyle now.
Well, that sucks. I think when I was 17, I probably would have really liked this record. I would have loved the lunkhead politics. It would have really resonated with me. I would have really, really would have liked this music a lot. I wouldn't have known what to call it, but it would have really hit the spot. I could not believe this was 1999. I kept like looking at it because they did other things in the mid-2000s and stuff like that. I was like, this record sounds later than that to me. It doesn't sound like anything I would have heard back then.
Yeah.
It's really like just always dark. It's like dour, malevolent darkness in, like, you know, the majority rule, like maybe like Backstabbers. Yep. Backstabbers was just this kind of like dreary, malevolent band. But also like Backstabbers, I feel like once they put their guitars back in the cases, they're probably handsome, get good grades, brush their teeth. But, you know, that goes for a lot of us in the suburbs at the time. I'm not, I can't really throw a stone at that. Linda Wyman, who wrote the Designing Web Graphics 3 book, recently sold her website for $1.5 billion to LinkedIn. So I'm giving Breed Extinction $4 billion out of 5 for this record. That's really good. That's a lot.
That's a lot, that's a lot of cash. They could donate to a lot of, I don't know, fur stopping fur farms or something, I'm sure, with the money. Do something with it. I don't know. So that's our show. There should be an episode next week. It should be a few days late or a couple days late. If there's no show, don't cry about it. It's Christmas. It's time to be with your family. But if, hopefully we'll have some good Christmas topics next week for you. I'll try and get to work on that. But until then, you could reach us at first7inchclub@gmail.com, or you could go to our Instagram and follow us there and reach us even more immediately. Or you could go to YouTube to listen to all the music that we've talked about over these past 25 episodes. And with that, we'll talk to you next week.
Jennifer, if you're real, drop us a line. I want to know how you felt when this record came out.
first 7-inch club interview will be with Jennifer.
We got to know what's going through your head when you're like, whoa, what the fuck?